Now that we're able to look past the material to the invisible field, we realize that we have an amazing playing field to play on. This invisible field that we've basically ignored since the days of Isaac Newton, all of a sudden we find ourselves on a vast and uncharted playing field that is also a praying field. And that indicates that life and learning are leading us into a domain where science and spirit cooperate. There have been some very, very interesting studies about the use of this field, particularly in regarding prayer and remote healing. So I'm just going to talk about one of these studies. In the 1990s, working with AIDS patients, Elizabeth Targ and her co-researcher Fred Sitcher designed an elaborate double-blind study to test the anecdotal reports of psychic healing and faith healing. Because they needed a uniform population, they chose AIDS patients with the same degree of illness. They also wanted to make sure they had a double-blind study so that nobody knew who was being prayed for, so they chose remote prayer as the modality. What they ended up with was 40 religious and spiritual healers, from evangelical Christians to Native American shamans and just about everything in between. All of these healers had one thing in common. They had all experienced success in treating quote-unquote hopeless cases. So they took a group of 20 patients and they divided them in half. Both groups received the same standard treatment, but only one group received remote healing. The healers never met their patients. They were given a photo, a name, and a T-cell count. Each of the 40 healers was asked to hold an intention of health and well-being for a patient 1 hour a day, 6 days a week for 10 weeks. Since there are 40 healers and 10 patients over a 10-week period, each patient could be healed by each healer. The results of the study were so amazing that Elizabeth Targ almost didn't believe them. After 6 months, 4 of the 10 patients in the control group, the one that received no healing prayer, died. 40% died. However, all 10 in the healed group were not only still alive, but they all said they felt better, and their medical reports seemed to confirm this. Elizabeth Targ and Fred Sitcher repeated the experiment, and they controlled for 50 separate factors that might have possibly influenced the outcome. Once again, those receiving the healing did better on all measures. Now, in this and other studies of healing prayer, this much seems to be true. It didn't seem to matter which religion, what religious expression, what modality, as long as there was a healing intention, as long as there was love and compassion that was being transmitted. Okay, so we now know that just like dogs who know when their owners are coming home, there's a field, somehow information gets transmitted through this field. Well, then the next question is it possible for large groups of people to actually be focusing on the same thing and influence the greater field with their coherence? Well, there is an indication that this is possible. In the 1970s, Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who you'll remember as the founder of Transcendental Meditation, claimed that when 1% of the population practiced TM in any one area, there'd be a reduction in crime in that area. In a well-documented study in 1993, TM practitioners converged on Washington, D.C., during the hot summer months of June and July. This is usually the time when there's heavy crime. Despite a near-record heat wave, something that also statistically correlates with high crime, crime began to decrease and continued to decrease throughout the duration of the experiment. Now, using the FBI uniform crime statistics, this decrease in crime could not be accounted for through any other analysis. Statistically, the likelihood these results could be attributed to pure chance was less than 2 chances in a billion. Interesting, however, when the experiment was over and the meditators went home, the crime rate began to rise again. Now, this would suggest that something else is needed to sustain an ongoing coherent field. So perhaps we need to be able to impact our field not just through our prayers, but through our collective intentions and actions. Of course, up until now, good intentions, they don't have a good track record. For thousands of years, the Ten Commandments have served as the purported operating system for the Judeo-Christian religion. And yet, look at where we are today. We are witness to the ultimate tragic oxymoron. Holy war and the Holy Land. Well, you know, maybe Ten Commandments are too many. Maybe, as theologian David Ray Griffin suggests, spirit is persuasive and not coercive. Maybe all we need is one suggestion. We're all in this together. Because if we look beneath the religious dogma, the foundation of just about every religion is some version of the golden rule. Treat other people the way you want to be treated. Love thy neighbor as thyself. The law of karma. What goes around comes around. The nearly universal suggestion of the world's spiritual systems is to practice some version of the golden rule. Now, I'm just going to offer you just a few. I mean, I have a list of 12 of these. I'm going to give you just a few and see if you're seeing a common theme here. Christianity, all things whatsoever ye would that men should do to you, do ye so to them, for this is the law and the prophets. Okay? Buddhism, hurt not others in ways that you yourself would find hurtful. Confucianism, do not do to others what you would not like yourself. This is starting to sound familiar. Judaism, what is hateful to you, do not do to your fellow man. This is the entire law. All the rest is commentary. So we go from Buddhism to Zoroastrianism. They're all saying the same thing. Do you think these religions might be trying to tell us something? Now, maybe instead of using our religious teachings to disempower ourselves and other people, maybe it's time that we teach an old dogma new tricks. Maybe it's time for children of God to finally grow up and become adults of God. Children of God worship the lawgiver. Adults of God strive to live the law. There's a wonderful quote from Alan Watts, who is a philosopher of comparative religions. Quote, "The common error of ordinary religious practice is to mistake the symbol for the reality, to look at the finger pointing the way and then to suck it for comfort rather than follow it." Now, we've been given this great suggested operating system by all of the great religious teachers. And up until now, through fear, manipulation, programming, we humans have done everything possible to avoid putting it into operation. But now, with the survival of our species at stake, we have to realize once and for all that the tired argument of religion versus science can no longer be used to avoid accepting our own power and responsibility as conscious co-creators of our reality. Now, what's really exciting about this is as we begin to consciously have this intention and practice of the golden rule, that in turn impacts the field. It impacts our field of beliefs. It impacts our collective happiness. It impacts the way other people behave as well. And all of a sudden, we have essentially extended evolution through this practice. Now, what we're also finding is that human nature turns out to be a choice. What we've called human nature is actually, in part, the choices that we make.